So that's where we enter into this phase of the conversation with you. And I ask that you keep focused on what we're talking about, racing toward Armageddon, the extreme branches of the world's great religions that are encouraging, indeed, maybe even actively trying to bring about the end of the world, not satisfied with letting whatever cosmic divine forces are at work in the world bring us to whatever the natural conclusion would be for this planet. Not satisfied with the idea that, well, it's in God's hands, and whatever God wants to do, well, then we'll just have to make the best of it. But rather saying, well, God's not doing it fast enough. So let's turn up the volume here. Let's see if we can't pour a little gasoline on this fire. That's the argument being made by Michael Bajan, and he supports it well in the book Racing Toward Armageddon. It could happen in our lifetimes, but it won't be because God's trying to make it happen. It's because people are just getting impatient. We'll come back to that coming up next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And so it is that we get to the calls, and there's a couple pieces, little straggly pieces that I had originally on my agenda to get to with Michael Bajan. Perhaps we'll be able to work those in throughout the phone calls here. We'll start with the person who's been hanging on the longest. Glenn is in Nash Vegas on Coast to Coast AM. Hey, Glenn.
No, Nashville.
No, I know, Glenn. I used to live there. Okay. We called it Nash Vegas when I lived there, baby. I'm sorry if you.
Okay.
It was a great joke then.
I was calling to refer to the sequence of events that happens that you seem to have some confusion on the church. When the church is raptured out, that causes an economic collapse, which brings on the one-world government and the Antichrist. The Antichrist makes a peace treaty with Israel for 7 years. 3.5 years into that treaty, he breaks that treaty with Israel. And then that's when all hell breaks loose in the world and all kind of calamities are happening. And what happens at the end in the Battle of Armageddon is when the kings of the East and all come together to fight the Antichrist's armies that he has. And
all right.
It's that time that Jesus comes back and ends the whole thing and places his foot on the Mount of Olives and declares 1,000 years of peace. And at the end of 1,000 years of peace, the reason that there's a battle again is Satan is loosed for a season to tempt the ones that's been born during 1,000 years of peace. And it's that army that Satan gathers together that is called the Battle of Gog and Magog.
Well, I love that interpretation, Glenn, and that is sort of the traditional interpretation.
That's a traditional interpretation of it.
And I'm so glad you brought up Gog and Magog, because again, you're having to interpret something to get it to kind of come out that way. Michael, can you talk about Gog and Magog and how the Bible seems to be very unclear about what this Gog and Magog thing is about?
Well, Gog and Magog are first mentioned in the Old Testament, and it's not quite clear whether Gog is a country and Magog the leader, or Gog the leader and Magog the country. But by the time it ends up in Revelation, the two leaders of Antichrist armies, and they've traditionally, by fundamentalists, been identified with Russia, and they are the people who, or the leaders of the army, which comes together at the second battle. I mean, after Armageddon, after 1,000 years of peace, Satan is loosed again, as the caller just mentioned, and then there's this big army with Gog and Magog seen as leaders. So it's John again drawing from Old Testament traditions, garbling them slightly, using them for his own reasons. But there is one thing the caller mentioned, which I think we haven't touched on, and that's the fact that in Revelation, there's absolutely no mention of the rapture. And of course, modern approaches to Revelation, the rapture, as the caller kindly mentioned, is integral. The rapture, Armageddon cannot be seen without the rapture. That is the taking up to heaven of all the people who are believers, so that they can sit up there in a kind of heavenly coliseum and watch the slaughter and mayhem down on earth.
And there isn't any mention of that, and yet that also speak to kind of this larger issue that comes into interpreting these apocalyptic scenarios, is that it always happens to somebody else, and that somehow the good will survive, but each one of these world religions has a different view on who that good is, and that even Islam has adopted this extreme Islam version that you speak about in the book, Racing Toward Armageddon, that there's an extreme version of Islam that has sort of adapted a Christian scenario and merely moved some of the pieces around a little bit, kind of like how John of Patmos adopts a lot of the Hebrew scripture for the book of Revelation.
This is one of the extraordinary things when you look at the Islamic apocalyptic traditions. The modern version, which started coming out in the 1990s, draws incredibly heavily upon Christian tradition. It even quotes people like Jerry Falwell and Billy Graham. They're reading the book of Revelation and drawing from it. One's left with the conclusion that the fundamentalists of the three religions have more in common with each other than with their own moderate mainstream believers. It's quite an extraordinary situation. As though the Christians are feeding Islamic paranoia.
And I thought this was interesting, too, because it sort of speaks to where biblically, where a lot of the problems are with some of these interpretations. As the caller said, and in his perspective, and I appreciate Glenn and I are going to be different on this as Christians, but Glenn said, you know, Michael, you're leaving something out of the book of Revelation. And really what he had done was put it in, which is the rapture.
Yeah.
He said, you're leaving it out, but it's not in there. And so when you go through kind of, when you went through the strict scenario as presented in Revelation, there was a reason why you skipped over it. And yet it's part of our psyche. It's part of the belief that the good won't suffer. And everybody else will, and that will be okay. And no wonder why some people are trying to force Armageddon to come about, because they are convinced that it will only benefit them. There's a pleasure principle involved. They're going to come out on top on this. And that's pretty scary, I think, for the rest of the world. Douglas is in San Francisco on Coast to Coast AM. Douglas?
Hey, always good to talk to you, Mr. Punnett, and it's an honor to speak with Mr. Beechin. Thank you so much for blessing us with your presence. And with your permission, Mr. Punnett, I want to ask certainly a few questions, but I just wanted to go over a bit on the Kings of the East, because as someone who would be identified as one of the 200 million Chinese hordes overrunning Jerusalem, there is a bit of a Protestant fundamentalist history in China that led to a tremendous apocalypse that was simultaneous to the American Civil War. In 1837, there was a man named Hong Xichuan who declared that he had ascended to heaven and talked with God and found out that he was Jesus Christ's younger brother, God's Chinese son. And he led the Taiping Rebellion at exactly the same time the Americans were fighting their civil war. And by the end of that rebellion, per Chinese textbooks, 175 million people died. And American mercenaries took part in that battle, but it was certainly something that has affected China to this point, where the Communist Party is just really down on any cults or religions forming. That's why they attack Falun Gong so vociferously.
And you had a question for Michael?
Sure, you bet. I wonder why the Battle of Armageddon, which took place in 1918 between the German cavalry and Lawrence of Arabia's camelry, is so easily skipped over by so many of the fundamentalists in the Christian world and the rest of the Islamic world that saw this battle take place, even though it was historically recorded as a military operation. Nobody cites that as the beginning or end point, and also how the rapture doctrine affects us environmentally in terms of people just don't think that there's any point in taking care of nature since they're all going to rapture up.
All right, go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, this is one of the great problems with the fundamentalist position, that they can just loot and rape the earth and throw all the companies that are producing toxic waste of one sort or another and just dump it anywhere, they don't have to care, because when Jesus comes back, he'll make it all right. It's total abdication of any sort of human responsibility. And this is a side effect of this kind of belief system, which is utterly irresponsible. And as regards to the battles of Armageddon, there's been quite a few battles there. And yeah. I point to one particular one in 1260, when the Mongols, under a Christian leadership, had a huge punch up just near Megiddo against the Egyptian Islamic forces, and in fact they were beaten. And so if you want a great army from the east being beaten at Armageddon, then that's probably the best one.
Well, and maybe then maybe that's when the apocalypse did happen, and we're living in the 1,000 years after that.
Well, if this is peace, God help us all.
Chris is in Crowley, Texas, on Coast to Coast AM, first-time caller line for Michael Bajant. Go ahead, Chris.
Good morning, Ian. Good morning, Michael.
Hi.
What I would like to say is, first, I'd like to challenge your definition of fundamentalism. First, I consider myself a fundamentalist Christian, but I don't necessarily believe in millennialism, which is what you're talking about. I believe that Matthew...
But isn't that why he keeps using the word extremist, though, Chris? I mean, we're talking about fundamentalist extremism, right?
Well, he did say possibly extremism.
I don't know. I think we've said extremism like about a million times, Chris. I know I have.
What I actually said was fundamentalists, most of whom I consider to be extremists.
Right.
And... So I'm aware of the problem that you're raising. And it's quite a difficult one to quickly deal with without getting locked into a whole lot of explanations.
Yeah, well, that's fine. I mean, if that's how you want to define fundamentalism, I just wanted to make sure that we understood each other, because when I define fundamentalism, I guess more or less I would consider myself New Testament Christian rather than fundamentalist, whereas Revelation refers to the destruction of Rome rather than something in the future.
Well, I'm glad we can clear up how you view yourself on that. And I think that it's good to be a non-apocalyptic person, to not be trying to bring about the apocalypse. And I hope that there are people like you in every position of power in every world religion. Vince is in Livingston, Montana, on Coast to Coast AM. Vince, you're talking with Michael Bajant. Go ahead.
Michael, I really find this fascinating. I've been researching these three religions for a good time now. And I appreciated the fact that you brought up the Battle of Horns between the Mamluks and the Mongols as being one possible outcome. I wanted to ask about Giuseppe Mazzini, the letter that he received from Albert Pike. Have you ever considered that in the conglomeration of this battle scenario, the Third World War that Albert Pike describes in the letter?
I think you better tell us about it. I'm not aware of it.
Go ahead, Vince.
Well, it's a letter that Pike wrote to Mazzini on August 15th of 1871. He went on to describe the First World War and the Second World War in great detail, and without getting too long, I'm prepared to read the Third World War scenario if you want me to.
Well, we probably don't have all that much time. There's so many people that want to get
paragraph.
On. So if it's just one brief paragraph, go ahead.
Okay, the Third World War must be fomented by taking advantage of the differences caused by the agentur of the Illuminati between the political Zionists and the leaders of the Islamic world. The war must be conducted in such a way that Islam and political Zionism mutually destroy each other. Meanwhile, the other nations, once more divided on the issue, will be constrained to fight to the point of complete physical, moral, spiritual, and economic exhaustion. We shall unleash the nihilists and the atheists, and we shall provide a formidable social cataclysm, which in all its horror will show clearly to the nations the effect of absolute atheism, origins of savagery, and the most bloody turmoil. Then everywhere the citizens, obliged to defend themselves against the world minority of revolutionaries, will exterminate those destroyers of civilization, and the multitude, disillusioned with Christianity, whose deistic spirits will from that moment be without compass or direction, anxious for an ideal, but without knowing where to render its adoration, will receive the true light through the universal manifestation of the pure doctrine of Lucifer, brought out to the public view.
Right, roughly here in this case, Pike is talking about Luciferianism as understood by Freemasonism, right? You're talking about Freemasonry?
Well, Albert Pike was the Grand Master of the Freemasons.
Right, so yeah, you're making the allegation that, right. That's very interesting. So, again, in a way, it falls in perfect. I mean, if that's true, and that's not just some apocryphal a paragraph that's attributed to Albert Pike, if he actually did write that, then he's following in the same footsteps that a lot of other people are. Just create a battle over there, have your enemies kill each other, and then you step in at the very end and go, aha, I'm here to save you all. Michael, we see that kind of played out a lot, don't we, in these scenarios?
Well, Pike was a general, wasn't he?
Civil War general, yes. But this would have been after, I think.
Yeah,
after
I mean, war. In terms, I mean, if we just look at it in the cold light of day, I mean, he's a military man trying to devise a strategy which will destroy all that he sees as bad. It's going to be bloody, and it's quite a good strategy, I guess. And for someone who came out of a civil war, which was pretty bloody, I suppose he's used to slaughter. But it's horrifying.
It's sort of the same twisted belief that, again, assuming this is true, that Charles Manson had. And Manson espoused the belief that if he could create a race war, that, you know, that eventually somehow he would end up on the top of the power pyramid. If he could just get enough people to kill each other, then he would step in. TJ is in Arizona and Tucson on Coast to Coast AM for Michael Bajan. TJ?
Yes, sir. My comment is about the ten-headed beast rising out of the seas. There is one rising out of the seas as we speak. And it does have a false prophet decked in scarlet and is planning to move his seat to Jerusalem. And that beast is the United Nations, the North American Union, and the European Union, or two of the kingdoms. And the false prophet is the Roman Catholic Church.
These are some pretty, these are longstanding usual suspects, aren't they, TJ? I mean, people saying that the UN and Catholicism are, I mean, people have been saying that for centuries.
Well, I mean, there are 10 nations being, well, the United Nations is dividing the world up into 10 kingdoms. The Roman Catholic Church.
Does it get the 10 kingdoms part? I don't know that part. Where do you see that?
Because it has a contract with the United Nations dividing the world into 10 kingdoms.
Where do you get that? How's that?
I've just seen documentations like on YouTube and videos and stuff.
Okay. And so these secret documents are already on YouTube?
I didn't say secret documents. Okay. I just saw the documentation on YouTube and other religious sites that expound this belief.
And Michael?
The problem with that is you can't test the ink and the handwriting to make sure that they're actually accurate or came from anybody who knows anything.
Well, the Roman Catholic Church is planning on moving his seat to Jerusalem. It's been doing that for the past 10 years.
Why do you say that? That just sounds nutty, TJ. Why would they leave the Vatican?
It might sound nutty, but the documentation is that they're going to do that.
Well, who's got the document?
Well, I mean...
Some guy on YouTube?
Sir, let me ask you something. Sir, do you always question the people you agree with where they're getting documentation from? I'm just some guy.
Yeah, documents are really important, TJ, honestly. And when you say something like, because there's a lot of people who are Catholic, I know I have a lot of friends who are Catholic, who would tell you that they are not part of the Church of the Antichrist. And so I realize that for you, that's no big thing to toss that out. But I would say, in defense of intellectual integrity, you got to give me more than some guy on YouTube says that the Catholic Church is moving to Jerusalem. That's just me. You can believe whatever you want, but you got to give me more than just, you know, somebody had something on an internet site that said they're giving up Rome for Jerusalem. Let's come back. Last half hour, open line calls on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. So last half hour here, the phones are already loaded up. I'll try and get you a line to jump in on the conversation with Michael Bajan, co-author of Holy Blood, Holy Grail. This one's a little bit more this worldly, as he looks at some of the current events that are shaping our near future I sure hope he's wrong on these, but it looks like that there are some perhaps well-intentioned. I mean, in that these are people that, you know, are living out their faith and don't think of what they're doing as evil. But there are some people in the extremes of the world's religions that are almost acting as agents of the apocalypse, that they're going to make the apocalypse happen. And they think some greater good will be achieved if they can just push us all into this world conflict, which they believe will justify all of the beliefs that they've held their whole lives. And there are people in power, there are people with money, there are people with armies that are more than willing to see this apocalypse come about in the near future. And I think we have to stand against that and say no, or at least can we put that up to a vote? And we'll get back to that. Your questions and comments about racing toward Armageddon next on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. And so back to the calls on Coast to Coast AM. We'll start with Lama Kunga, who's in Fort Lauderdale, Florida, for Michael Bagent on Coast to Coast.
Hi, Ian. Hi, Michael. Michael, I'd like to know, do you know about the 14th century teaching that came out of India as a result of the Mughals coming in and bringing Islam? It went into Tibet. It's known as the Kala Chakra teaching. It's associated with Shambhala. This is another one of those scenarios where, you know, we're going to come in and save everybody. But according to that, the Shambhala myth talks about that it is, you know, Islam and the Christians and the Chinese are going to have big war. And when they set the world on fire, the kings that are in Shambhala, known as the Rigsan kings, will come down and basically be like Red Cross and humanitarians. To this day, the Dalai Lama teaches this to about 10,000 people, usually in India. It's a secret initiatory teaching. And I just want to know if you have heard of this, because, you know, this is a fourth world religion that deals with this prophecy of Armageddon.
I haven't heard of that before, I have to say, but I find it very interesting. But it doesn't surprise me. I think most religious traditions, one way or another, have a version of an apocalyptic tradition. I mean, Hinduism, for example, has this idea of massive renewals. I think it's every 23 or 25,000 years, the Yugas, where everything is destroyed and everything starts again. And there's possibly a bit of that tangled up with this. But that's very interesting. I'll take a look at it. Thank you for bringing it to my attention.
And yet it may also not fit in the context of racing toward Armageddon, because nobody may be trying to make that happen right now. That it exists out there as sort of this belief that was discussed at one point. But you might have apocalyptic scenarios in non-religious traditions, where people in purely secular societies might have a vision of how the world was going to end. I just think most reasonable people don't want the world to end. They don't want to ruin things for their children and grandchildren. And that's the part that's sort of surprising about the forces that seem to be at work to be bringing about this apocalypse in our lifetime. Judy is in Houston, Texas, on Coast to Coast. Judy?
Yes, hi. Fascinating program. Also, I'm looking forward to your little slot that I think would be great on the web, which would be Punnett's Pundits.
Ah, well, thank you. People often get those words mixed up already. So.
Yeah, try to say it fast three times.
Right.
Yeah.
I probably could, actually, but go ahead.
Well, I'll make this really fast. I know everybody's on the phone. I don't know if you or anyone else has seen linktv.org. They have shown some news clips from Al Jazeera television stating that the Saudi sheikhs are not going to accept dollars for payment for oil, that it'll only be gold will be the only acceptable form of payment. And do you think that'll escalate things? And also, you know, going to the gas stations, I go to shake hands with the clerk behind the counter. They're telling me it's against their religion to shake hands, and I'm just wondering if they're being checked out, you know, on behalf of Homeland Security, because those are, you know, kind of like local areas, you know, with gas tanks. So I'll just hang up and listen. Thanks.
All right. Michael, let's deal with the gold issue first. I hadn't heard about that. That's very interesting.
I haven't heard about that either, but I think I can imagine it being on the cards by some of the sheikhs. I mean, they're constantly talking of moving to the euro or some other currency, but the fact remains is that most of the Saudi investments are probably in US dollars anyway. So if they stop accepting dollars, they'll do their own investments a lot of harm. I would see it as agitation by some of the smaller players in the field, frankly.
And I'm not sure how practically that could even happen, because you'd have to move such massive amounts of gold physically. You'd need super tankers full of gold at some point to be able to pay for the oil that we're talking about, wouldn't you?
I mean,
that's just, I don't. But then the idea about, say, this Muslim man who, I'm assuming that's what she was talking about, who worked at a gas station who wouldn't shake her hand. That's not terribly uncommon. I know lots of Muslim, and I would call them friends, who have customs that are just different than mine, especially when it comes to the human body and who they will touch and why. And women in Islam touch other women. A woman Muslim behind the counter might have easily shook her hand, but it would not be appropriate for a man in some cases who was Muslim to shake her hand, correct?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of problems, which, I mean, I've been to the Middle East on many occasions and I still get caught out on the things. And the countries differ. I mean, Egypt, for example, is quite liberal in many ways. Other countries are not so. It's cultural differences, and as human beings in this world, we have to respect other cultural differences. But when those cultural differences are put into the service of a political or spiritual ideology, then I think it becomes something quite different.
I have a friend who's a Catholic professor who has a brother-in-law who is Muslim. And his brother-in-law wants to keep holding hands with him. That's just very common for men to hold hands and walk around Saudi Arabia. And he says he just has the hardest time getting his mind around holding hands with his brother-in-law. Dave is in Cape Cod on Coast to Coast AM, where there are sharks nearby. Dave, have you heard about that? Near Chatham?
Oh, yeah. There's swordfish out there, too.
Well, I mean, there's a lurking great white that they're keeping an eye on out there. But you had a question for Michael Bajan?
Yes, I have. The Wahhabi sect is providing most of the Taliban, and at the rate the U.S. military is going killing off Taliban, is it likely the Wahhabi sect will concentrate more on converting Africa to Islam, because Africa had almost been totally converted to Islam before the 1700s when the Europeans, you know, used a lot of divide and conquer and conversion to Christianity to break it up?
Interesting thought. Michael?
Yeah, I think that's a very interesting thought, and I think it's an accurate perspective, frankly. Certainly, there's a lot of Wahhabi-type evangelism going on in Africa, but of course there's a lot of Christian evangelism going on simultaneously, and we see it in Nigeria, for example, where the country's become completely split between the two factions.
Now, I can see the Wahhabi, again, if people are just tuning in, Wahhabi is a particular type of understanding of Islam. I could understand the Wahhabi connection to the Taliban. We certainly saw it in Osama bin Laden, who's Saudi, used funding for the Taliban. But is the Taliban traditionally linked to the Wahhabi point of view, or is it more traditionally linked to Iran?
No, the Taliban are hardline Sunni Wahhabi. It's one of the problems. Iran doesn't like the Taliban one bit. And not only that, Iran's got a huge drug problem from opium slipping across the border.
Sure.
There's absolutely no love lost between Iran and Afghanistan.
Thank you for clearing that up. John is in Bonnie Lake, Washington, on Coast to Coast. John?
Hi. I have a couple of comments and then a couple of questions. In the book of Revelation in chapter 3, verse 10, it definitely tells us that God is going to spare some people. I won't say that it says the rapture, but it says because they have kept the word of my patience, I will keep them from the hour of tribulation that shall come and try the whole earth. And so that is a reference to that. And also the angels do put a mark of God in the forehead of people that are kept before the great outpouring of the tribulation hour. And
but stop right there. There's an interesting thing that and you kind of have to skip over it, John, in order for it to make sense for a lot of folks. You're talking about the sparing of the 144,000.
I'm talking about putting the mark of God upon the forehead.
Right, I'm with you. It's the 144,000 that will be spared, and they will all be men.
Well, not necessarily, because
it's in Revelation that they're all men and they're all virgins.
The virgins are people that are chaste virgins. These are people that have been renewed in their understanding of the Holy Ghost.
John, hang on. I understand that you're putting that in there to make that make sense, but if we're just to read the actual text.
I'm not putting it in there, sir. It's in the, you have to read the whole Bible.
I do. John, trust me. I read the whole Bible all the time.
The Holy Ghost has to also be.
John, you got to calm down a second because we're having a. And I don't want this to turn into a whole big thing, but it's very specific about it being men.
You turned it into a big thing.
John, it's very specific about it being men. And Michael, explain that to John.
Can I just say this, please? The people of Israel here, this is the 12 nations. God is going to take 12 tribes and put them on the earth in the last days.
I know that's what you believe.
Jew is one that is one inwardly. Do you understand? You don't have to be a Jew to be a part of this group. You just have to be
I totally get that idea, okay. And I understand that Christian viewpoint, and I've studied that Christian viewpoint for a very long time. But you are missing a fundamental part of that. And Michael explained that about how it is going to be men, and that it isn't. They're really that's a very odd thought in a way that it's only going to be 144,000 and it will be men.
I know it's one of the trouble is a lot of people don't actually sit down and read Revelation without imposing some kind of belief system or interpretation on it. If you read Revelation straight. And just look at the words, just look at what it says. It states quite explicitly that the 144,000 will be virgins and will be men. And that
it says not spoiled by women. Is that what you're saying virgins, but it just says not defiled by women? What's the line?
Yeah,
I can't remember.
Something. I'd have to go back to the original text to get the exact words for you.
But that's part's really key because that means then that women won't be included, and it doesn't. 144,000 is a very small number, and is there a corresponding select group in the Muslim extremist view of that of the Mahdi? Is that do they have the same belief in the Messiah that will only save but a small few?
No, not at all, and neither does the Jewish. End times thought. Basically, for the Muslims and the Jews, all members of the faith will be saved, well, as much as possible after the cataclysmic wars and so on.
Right.
It's only the Christian tradition through Revelation which has this restricted number.
John, first time caller in Tampa Bay on Coast to Coast AM. John?
Thanks, Ian. Hello, Michael.
Hi.
I wanted to ask a question about the bones of that were found in Blanchefort Castle, but brought to Blanchefort Castle in the Pyrenees near Narbonne, and then in turn returned to that tomb that you wrote about in the book, Holy Blood, Holy Grail, at to Argo Arcadia or something like that, where the Catholic Church was blackmailed by the Knights Templars, and what I'm wondering is why you skipped around the question on whether or not those bones were the bones of Jesus Christ that they brought back from the First Crusade.
I think what you're relating to is I mean, I'm not aware of any bones being found there, but I think from memory, I mean, it was 25 years ago, I think what we were probably saying was that there's no hard evidence such as bones or a birth certificate or death certificate or marriage certificate. I'm not aware of any bones being in a cave in the south of France. I know other people have written on that subject and speculated like that, but I never
but
have.
It wasn't.
I mean, my arguments have not put Jesus in the south of France. Mary, yes, but not Jesus.
Kevin is in Colorado Springs on Coast to Coast EM on a wild card line for Michael Bajan. Go ahead, Kevin.
Thank you, Ian. My question is, what can we do? How can we stop this? I feel like I personally am on a runaway train with no brakes. I feel that the religion is the drug of the people. You hear, I find it fascinating, a lot of the people that called tonight had to be right. Their way had to be right. And I just don't see how we can stop this unless we can convince people to respect each other's religion and not have to be right.
I want to ask you a question. Kevin, I got to ask you a question. How can you talk about respect and talk about modeling respect, which I'm great with, and I think we all want to be right, so I'm not going to elevate myself above any caller. But then how can you say that and then use the term from Marx on religion being the opiate of the masses?
I don't mean that as an insult to anybody.
Okay, it sure sounds like one.
Honestly, Ian, think about all the wars that have been caused by religion.
Well, think about all the wars that have been caused by non-religious people. Wars satisfy goals, right?
Well, realistically, what we're talking about here is three of the world's great religions that are moving, and some of those people in those religions wanting to move to Armageddon.
Right. And well, there we are. That we are. Michael, you have a... Go ahead, Michael. I'm sorry, Kevin. Go ahead, Michael.
Yeah, I think we can have broad solutions. I mean, I give the idea of the change of attitude and so on. But if we want something practical and something that can be done immediately, I think there's a need to strictly separate religion and politics. Keep them apart so they don't bleed into each other. That's point number one, I think, to preserve democracy and to preserve tolerance.
Well, and I think that religion, yes, has been the cause of wars, but it's also been abused in many cases to become the cause for war, when really the cause for war was more water, more oil, more gold, more land, more power, and religion was the wedge that was used to get to that, but it wasn't the cause of it. Not in every case, anyway. Michael Bajan, thank you so much for racing toward Armageddon and for this very sobering conversation. And I really encourage people that are vexed about what they're hearing, pick up the book, read it, work with it, make notes in the margin. And we'll, I'm sure, return to this conversation sometime in the future. And thank you so much for your time and getting up early for us, Michael. Deus te amat, and I do too.